Are you ready to get started?
Yep.
Okay, cool. I'll hit some buttons. Hey, you'll be surprised how prepared I am. Hello. You're listening to Castabrius. I'm Christian Corley. He's James McLean. We haven't been with you for a couple of weeks, but we're back now. And there's a few things of interest to talk about. Bugger. And there's a few things of interest to talk about. Oh, do you know? Oh, I'm so cross with myself now. I said to James before the show started, yeah. You're going to be surprised how professional I am or polished I am or something like that. And then that happened. I got to fix that button. Anyhow, so yeah, we're back for another podcast. It's been a strange few weeks because obviously David Tennant's the Doctor and... It's still taking a little bit of getting used to, James.
Okay, yeah, don't know. I've kind of rolling with it at the moment.
You're rolling with it. Well, I mean, I'm rolling with it, but it's a kind of, you know, when we were talking about this 12 months ago or whenever, we came to the sensible conclusion that not David Tennant's not going to be the next Doctor. What a ridiculous idea that is. That would be like casting Tom Baker in 1996, and here we are.
Yeah, I mean, I still think there are probably for more serious voices to debate whether there are sort of questions about shoving him in before a new Doctor. I don't know. I kind of find it, you know, I'm happy for it. And I do sometimes wonder if there's logistical reasons for it as well. You know, I don't know. You know, maybe Shooty's not available.
I think that's been stated somewhere that he wasn't going to be available for when they wanted to start filming,
which in that case I think this is absolutely a very nice workaround, you know, in the way that television, especially Doctor Who, you know, does best is trying to find ways to, you know, recast Jamie hashtag recast Jamie, you know. So yes, yeah. So I'm not feeling very well today, so I'm my brain's going to fog a little, going back to what you were saying before we started.
Yeah. Well, but also, the other thing is, I mean, it basically gives Shooty a sort of a Matt Smith intro in some ways, doesn't it? It means like a comparatively unknown actor comes into the show as the star on the back of David Tennant's starring performances. And it worked out all right for Matt Smith, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't understand.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
So David Tennant is the star of Doctor Who from 2005 through to 2010. Okay, so you got this. He's the star of the show. He's the biggest star in Britain almost on TV. Uh-huh. And he leaves, and then this guy comes in who most people haven't heard of, Matt Smith, and he's got he's basically got the biggest show on telly, and he comes in and he absolutely kills it in the good sense, you know, he does superbly. And I'm thinking this is Shooty Gatwa has the same opportunity here. He's coming into a show that is, I mean, you know, it's David Tennant. These three episodes, two and a half episodes, two episodes, whatever's happening in 2023 with David Tennant and Doctor Who, these are going to be like audience killing episodes. These are going to be like the show's highest rated episodes for years. And then he comes in and takes over the show.
So what you're saying is that there is a certain, should we call it, like the Tennant stratagem, which Matt Smith will have, which Shooty can borrow from.
If you like.
To, given that they both now have the same hit-off point.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it goes back to why, you know, we were saying, and I'm sure everyone else was saying as well, you know, that Davis's strength has always been as a producer, as being someone who, as a producer, kicks shows into action. That's, you know, what a good producer will do, will find a way to reinvigorate.
Yeah.
And certainly Chibnall tried it with mixed success. And I'd say Moffat tried it. I don't know. Obviously, as we've said before, many people really like Moffat. And I think, you know, he's a very clever writer. And that first season is very popular with fans. But it didn't feel like it was doing the sort of landmark stuff that Davis did when he took over. None of them have done that. I mean, you know, when Davis came in 2005, you've got not just, you know, showcasing the new Doctor, as we've said before, you've got webisodes, you're sort of taking advantage of new medium, you're finding ways to, you know, draw people and global media as well as local media. You know, there's some very clever ways of trying to get the message out about this brand new, exciting thing, which I don't think any of the other producers really have done. I mean, Moffat did tap America, to give him credit as well.
Yeah.
But it was a fairly traditional way of tapping America that we've seen in shows before, in the same way that, you know, Only Fools and Horses tapped various countries in a couple of their specials. It didn't feel like it was doing something particularly unique.
I think
while this all feels very fresh and, you know, on the edge approach to sort of re-energising the shows.
Yeah, I'd largely agree with that, except for the video games point, which you didn't make, but I'm going to make, and that is Russell T Davies stayed away from video games completely.
Right.
Whereas there's two others did not. There's been plenty of Doctor Who video games since Moffat took over in 2010.
Yeah, but again, did they... They didn't do anything to really give anything new. It was, again, it's a very traditional transmedia approach.
Oh, yes, but
approach.
What I'm saying is that, yeah, exactly. I mean, it's media that Russell T Davies didn't go for, whereas they did. Now, whether that is they found, I mean, they kind of found it easier, but maybe they found it easier, the idea of shipping that job out and then just having script approval, whereas presumably Russell T Davies had script approval over all these little bits of media that went out.
Well, I think Davies was just... Davis's use of transmedia was about using it to utilize to draw people into the main show. It wasn't about per se creating spin-offs that sound their own right. All the spin-off stuff always fed back in some way to that larger beast. Even down, as I say, to sort of the web stuff that he would do, even his spin-offs were very, very intertwined. Which again, Moffat did as well. So, you know, I'm not saying Moffat didn't do any of this. I'm just saying that at the time, Doctor Who hadn't really had any of this bar K-9 and company. You know, 20 years before, they didn't really have that sort of looking at the media terrain and looking at ways, well, how can we really sort of push this? How can we engage, especially with young people? How can we tap this in a new way? And I think that's what Davis did then. And I think in a very different way, he's doing it again now. Mm-hmm. And the talent approach, which, as I say, and as you said, I hope is actually more to do with schedules and finding quite innovative way to keep the show interesting before the new actor is ready, which would make sense. Because I recall, you know, Jodie was always saying that she'd go when Chibnall went, and they both always said about 3 years. So you've got that extra year to sort things out. It's a very, you know, and the seeds have been laid. You know, the curators kind of laid these seeds already. And the Valeyard has, I suppose, too. Mm. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, back, you know, a year ago when we talked about this, I didn't think they'd go down this route. I thought it would, like I said, possibly seem a bit rude.
Yeah.
You know, you have a brand new person and you stick your possibly your most popular doctor of the last 20 years for him for a couple of episodes, and you feel like, well, that's a bar to live up to. But again, if that's more logistical things, which would make sense, and I think, as you say, I think Shooty will kill it anyway, so
in a good way.
In a good way.
Okay, well, you know, we've got sidetracked a little bit there, because we do actually have something of import to talk about, because there is a new Doctor Who companion, the official Doctor Who companion, with her own celebratory press release and all that sort of thing. It is Millie Gibson of Coronation Street fame, who will be playing Ruby Sunday, which is a lovely name. I have to say, I haven't watched Coronation Street in a few years, so I don't know anything about Kelly Nealon and her storylines, but I have seen the video clips of Millie Gibson chatting with Shooty Gatwa, and it all seems very nice and genial, and they seem to have a bit of chemistry together, which is nice. Something maybe has been missing in that dimension from Doctor Who for a few years.
Yeah, I don't know her work. I know family who've watched Coronation Street said that she's very good, so
right.
That's good. There's a little bit of me again, which it feels a bit of that, another young female, I don't know, kind of feels like, you know, been here before.
Is it a winning formula?
Well, Twitter, there was a lot of people going, oh, four, I'll be watching it again. Oh, cool, this is excellent. You know, so there was that.
Did people say four? Winning
formula.
Four?
Yeah, they still
didn't,
say
didn't say
things.
Type 40. Oh, dear me. It's never going to catch on that. I've been trying to get this catching on since 2005.
I don't think they were that sort of engaged in Doctor Who, to be honest, the people who were saying that. But, yeah, I mean, it works. And it's nice to sort of pilot young actors as well. You know, so a British show can be there to sort of help kickstart early careers. I think that's always exciting in media, whether it's, you know, TV or comics or films. But yeah, there was a little bit of me which was like, well, I don't know if I can get too excited about this because it feels like the same sort of dynamic we've seen. And it kind of feels like an old dynamic, which I'm sure will be very different this time round. But just on the information I've got.
Yeah.
So, like, okay.
It's, I mean, it is early days, isn't it? We don't know anything, so really.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was like that when, you know, Rose Tyler appeared and, you know, she was very good.
Well, I was absolutely thrilled that it was Billie Piper because I'd seen that other thing that she did slightly before Doctor Who. And I thought she wasn't great in it, but I thought she was better than I expected. And I thought she might, there might be something in that that she can, that will come through in Doctor Who. And I was right, because she was excellent.
We'll just see how they do this, but it does feel that that is the one area of the show which seems near impossible to change. It just, it can't be broken to some degree. And I still think it does.
Well, I was about to say, is it just Star Wars and the Jedi? But then again, I just remembered I haven't watched it all. I haven't watched any of it yet, but I do know there are no Jedi in Andor. So it's not that, is it?
Well, yeah, I know what you mean. And I, to be fair, again, to Disney, and there's logistical reasons why they're doing this, to maintain their streaming platform by keeping their shows, you know, people would say milking their franchises, but doing it in a way which keeps doing fresh new things with them to keep them from dying out, and that's how they sustain their subscriptions. So it's not like they're just doing it out of the goodness of their own heart, but they're doing it because, you know, it's a way of sustaining their worlds. But
yeah,
I kind of just like to have seen something a bit different. And, you know, to give credit to Chibnall, you know, there were feelings of him doing that occasionally, but again, not really with the companions.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they haven't tried alternatives over the years. Obviously, Donna's an older character. The two guy characters, the Graham and the other one.
But they still,
John
even
character,
in Graham,
older characters.
And Graham and Ryan, you still had
owned Ryan as well,
Yaz,
who was
archetypal Rose.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
She was Rose, you know, the person who was bored with their job, could do so much more, you know, needed to backpack around the universe, same character.
Does Doctor need a new chameleon then as the primary companion?
Yeah, it needs something. I just don't understand. I mean, again, unless it's something which, you know, they've discovered in terms of data that it is integral to viewing audiences, it just feels a very, oh, we've said this before, a very limiting way of creating your main show dynamic. Well, we'll see whether she's contemporary. If she's contemporary again, be like,
Well, I mean, we've talked about this before with Clara, haven't we? How she was nearly the original Clara. And then they sort of backed out of it for some reason. Did they get cold? I think they got cold feet over it, didn't they? Which seems odd, but
it just seems very odd for a show about time travel. Is it the people you time travel with are never people from other times?
Yes.
You know, aside from occasional ones in the new series like Jack. And that's really all I can think of, really. I mean, obviously, you've got a few in the old series, you know. Adric, obviously Jamie, Harry,
or from the future,
because he was at least 60 years out of date with his gentlemanly sensibilities. But yeah, it just feels weird that you just don't do that. They've done it in passing. You know, they did it in the last series in passing, where she's sort of, where Jodie hung out with people from characters from different eras, and they became part of stories, but then that was always dropped at the end. And I'm just not quite sure I would love to know the reason for it. Is it logistical? Is it easier for getting writers in to write for contemporary characters? Does it just make, does it, is it still about giving viewers something that they can link to? I'd like to think after 20 years, not so much needing that anymore, but I don't know. But I'm sure she'll be good. I mean, it's, as you say, I mean, she's clearly hired because she's got the skills. And she's clearly going to be popular with, you know, audiences for various reasons, for skills, and obviously because some people still watch television for the visuals, for the aesthetic. That seems to still be a thing.
Do they?
But yeah, just, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Well, as I say, you know, the ones that are saying, oh, I'll be rewatching this again. I'll be watching Doctor Who again if she's in it. Again, suggests to me that they're not coming back because they think it's a, you know, a brand, you know, going back to a good, you know, Russell T Davies is a good writer and you've got a brand new series. It seems to be more about, oh, well, they've actually put in a, you know, someone who's hot and I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So I do think that's still a factor, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. We will find out more as time progresses towards November 2023. Now, a few other things have been taking place of late in the Doctor Who world, but nothing of it is of particular huge importance, apart from one thing which we're going to come to shortly. But before we get to that, I just want to say that there has been a poll of the best TV show, or the greatest TV show, in the Radio Times. Now, this is the Radio Times, which puts a lot of Doctor Who content out. The Radio Times put a poll on the website to celebrate its 25th online anniversary. Wow, 25 years of the World Wide Web. It's more than that, but even so. And asked readers what they thought was the greatest TV show of the past 25 years, and Doctor Who came second behind Call the Midwife. Now, I've seen Call the Midwife. It's a nice programme. It's not what I would call the greatest, though. Line of Duty and Sherlock joint third. Breaking Bad and Game of Thrones came fourth and fifth. Fleabag, Gavin and Stacey, Succession, The Sopranos and The Wire are all in the top ten there as well. It's a strange collection of shows, really. Certainly in an odd order.
And they were just able to pick. Not from a list, just...
I guess it's probably from a list that they were selecting from, yes. So there's going to be things in there that aren't, you know, missed.
I thought
out.
It would be sort of shows which, well, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, it's an odd list.
It is an odd list. It is.
Just goes to show.
It does go to show what's popular and what isn't popular. And I mean, I haven't looked at the Call of the Midwife audience figures. But I imagine they're stronger than Doctor Who's over the past 10 years. Because it had a regular time slot, and it didn't attempt to upset its following.
Yeah, the time slot is something we've long been saying is important, haven't we?
I think, I mean, if you wanted to nurture a weekly audience, then I guess the time slot is important. Yeah, I mean, there's obviously this whole thing about, you know, the streaming side of things and binge watching and everything, and that's absolutely fine if that is what you're expecting your audience to do. The BBC don't really seem certain whether they want people to binge watch Doctor Who and watch it online or watch it weekly, so you're going to end up with this kind of hinterland of not really being certain what the audience figure is going to be, because you're not really certain what you want your audience to be doing.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's that. Now, I did mention, allude to this slightly a couple of minutes ago. There is something kind of cool that's happened over the past few days, and it is our friend Gareth Kavanagh and his co-conspirator Colin Brockhurst have revealed the cover of Warp Warp issue 5, which has a lovely cover of Voyager from Doctor Who magazine, artist John Ridgway and writer Steve Parkhouse on the legendary Doctor Who comic strip saga. And across the top, there's some features. Iron Empire, The Legion Marches Again, The Daleks, New TV 21 and Dark Strips. And then, Nelvana found details on the unmade cartoon series. And it appears that Richard Bignall has dug into what happened. And I guess... Richard Bignall is probably the most renowned Doctor Who investigator of lost stuff over the years. He's the guy who, looking at it right now, the old Nothing at the End of the Lane from 2015, issue 4, which had a feature in it about the Might not have been that one, actually. It might have been the one after. But there was a feature that he uncovered about the missing or the lost Peter Cushing audios from the 60s. So Nelvana, the Doctor Who animations, which were... there's a nice video I was watching on YouTube about these recently, which there's an interview with by a another Doctor Who podcast. Apparently there's other Doctor Who podcasts with one of the people involved with the... I think it's the character designer with the Nelvana. Now, Nelvana was a Canadian animation house in the 80s and 90s, and they were developing a Doctor Who cartoon, but it was axed quite an early stage of development. So there's going to be a feature about this in What 5. I think that alone is probably going to be worth the cover price, because it's one of those mysterious grails of Doctor Who that no one really knows much about.
I know nothing about it at all.
There you go. See, even James doesn't know about it. So there's been a few designs and things doing the rounds on the internet over the years, and I'll put some of these in the show notes. It's probably, I guess, I remember reading about it back in the day and then being astonished that nothing happened with it, because I was a very optimistic child. And we've probably talked about Doctor Who cartoons on our podcast in the past, I'm guessing, because we've been doing it a long time, and I can't remember every discussion that we've had. And even the ones that I wasn't involved with, I remember them even less. But there is that excellent sort of anime-style Doctor Who cartoon, which I've always loved, which was hand-drawn by an artist and then uploaded onto YouTube many years ago, and it's still there, and it still looks marvellous and lifts sound effects from the Pertwee era, and has both versions, both classic series versions of the Master. Okay, the Delgado Nainley version of the Master, I should say, if we're going to be precise. And Pertwee and Cybermen and... oh, and the Brigadier as well, and Daleks. And it's loads of fun and it looks really cool. And it doesn't make any sense, but it doesn't really need to, because it looks great. And I suppose, I don't know, over the years we've had those other cartoons, haven't we? Those official cartoons, such as the two David Tennant era cartoons.
Yeah.
And I quite liked the first one of those, but I wasn't that keen on the second one, because it went heavy into the CGI, the second one, and looked like a kids' TV show. And I know it was a kids' TV show, but it looked like a kind of preschool kids' TV show, because I don't think they got the animation right, or there was not enough money for the rendering, textures and stuff like that. I don't know. Maybe it was just the wrong time to be doing stuff like that. But it didn't look as... I mean, it was going out opposite, you know, Captain Scarlet and post-reboot as well. It just didn't look the part, I didn't think. As opposed to the one with David Tennant and the Tenth Doctor and Martha and the Anthony Head character, whose name... Why have I forgotten the names of these cartoons, James?
Was it Dreamland?
Dreamland was the second one, absolutely right, because it was set in the USA in the 50s, wasn't it? And the first one was Infinite Quest.
Right.
Infinity Quest, one of the two. Now, that's one I liked. I think, Infinite Quest, it felt like it was working. And I don't know. You know when you get those pale textures on CGI? I get bored looking at them, basically. So that's why Dreamland didn't work for me, I think.
Okay. I don't know. I didn't really like either. I just wasn't that interested. But then they weren't aimed at our generation, really. So I didn't blame them for it, but... I didn't feel that they really offered anything particularly exciting.
That's fair enough. I think the Infinite Quest, I think it feels like it comes from the same place as things, you know, like the previous Doctor Who animations, those online animations. Whereas Dreamland just feels like it's its own thing completely. It's not really quite Doctor Who. Doesn't look quite like Doctor Who. It's looks like a fan production, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. When you see people that have created these 3D mannequins and in their 3D software, which you'll know more about than I do, so I'm kind of riffing here slightly, so do dip in anytime you want to help me out, and then uploaded them onto YouTube to recreate lost episodes or whatever. That's how Dreamland feels to me.
Like, again, it was good to see it trying different things, but...
So Dreamland was in 2009, whereas Infinite Quest was 2007. It doesn't seem that long ago in some ways, and then in others, obviously, it does. But yeah, so that's coming in Vought Five, and I also hear that Vought Five is going to be available to pre-order before Christmas, which is, I mean, it was big enough a surprise hearing that there was going to be a Vought Five so soon when we spoke to Gareth a few weeks ago. So to be able to pre-order it before Christmas is really exciting as well. I'm on board for that.
Yeah, they're very good quality, aren't they?
They're marvellous. I'm actually looking at them now because I have a little bit of shelf for, I say a little bit of shelf. Well, yeah, it's about 2 inches of shelf for all the Vorps I've got. So there's volume one, volume two, volume one and two collected, volume three, and issue four, strangely. They've got volume one, volume two, volumes one and two collected, volume three, then issue four. I don't know. There's no idea, no clue how big it's going to be, but just to give you a clue or a comparison, I'm going to just do a bit of mic work here. So this is the original issue one hitting the floor. Volume one, I should say. This is volume two. This is the combined volumes one and two. Ooh. This is volume three. Ooh. And this, hang on, I'll take the record out before I break it. This is issue four. Issue four is a little bit lighter than volume three. Basically, what I'm saying is that hopefully volume five will be at least as big as volume four, issue four.
Very good. An interesting metric.
Yes, thank you. I thought so too. So a couple of things to clear up. We do still have a interview planned with Philip Bates and hopefully Colin Howard concerning Time Slides, the Doctor Who artwork of Colin Howard, which is coming out from Candy Jar Books. I have a PDF to read coming from Philip shortly in order to preview that, and then we'll sort out the interview and then we'll do it, and that'll be on the podcast. And there is still a interview outstanding which I'm yet to bring you concerning the Doctor Who Eternity Clock game from around 10 years ago, which starred Matt Smith and Alex Kingston, and that's also on the editing board ready to finish off as well. So they're going to be coming along to you soon, and hopefully we'll get them out before Christmas or in time for Christmas, so you'll have a nice Doctor Who flavoured Christmas after pre-ordering Vought 5, knowing that there's no new Doctor Who on TV this end of this year, which is going to be unusual, actually, isn't it? This hasn't happened for a long time. Yeah. I don't really know what we can do about that, other than suggest you get a really good DVD/Blu-ray collection to enjoy on Christmas evening / New Year's Day evening. James and I will be back for a new chat soon, which will be less topical and about something kind of specific. But until then, it's goodbye from us.